Now, today I'm talking with Debbie Young, who is the organiser of the very wonderful and I think rather unique Hawkesbury Upton Literary Festival. Debbie, thank you so much for giving us this interview. As I say, from what I understand, there's really not much like the festival. It's got a wonderful programme of events, writers of all sorts, discussion panels, there are workshops and so on, and it's going to be held on the 21st of April this year, but it is an annual event. How did this wonderful rare blossom come to emerge?
Started out, can you believe, the plan to have a few author friends into the one of the local village pubs for a couple of hours to coincide with World Book Night, which is on Shakespeare's birthday, which we did for the first time 4 years ago. It quickly became apparent that a lot more authors would be keen to take part than I had originally anticipated, and that a lot of local people were very keen to come to it. So we started out with a programme of readings and talks that were going to go from 8 till 10, and I had to keep extending the programme either side of that time slot. So we started the readings, I think, about 6 o'clock, and we finished at chucking out time. because we started off with that heritage of having a very short time frame in which to put all that we want to have in the programme, I've now developed this culture where we have, and partly for all the ease of organisation, we have all the events from 10 o'clock in the morning till 5:30 we wrap up. We have a new event starting on the hour, in fact two new events starting on the hour every hour throughout the day, which means that every talk, every set of readings, we have a series of themed readings through the day, they all last no longer than 50 minutes. So we have panels on particular topics with between 3 and 6 authors on each of those, which you can imagine means that it's very concentrated. We're packing a lot of people, a lot of opinions, a lot of experience into short time frames.
You are.
It's very punchy, it's very sort of sharp and punchy, but also very, very jolly and very fun. It's a real sort of adrenaline-fueled thing.
That's great. I'm just looking at the programme now, and you've got some very interesting topics. There's crime writing, from cosy to chilling. I like that. Preserving words. There is 6 ways to be a writer, writing for children, writing your passion, and so on. These sound very interesting, and I'm sure will attract, you know, a lot of people to pay attention to them.
Well, I think so. We've had standing room only in the past for some of our talks, and I choose the topics partly to match the authors that I know and who I think would be good speakers and engaging speakers, and who I've read books by all of the people there, so they're all tried and tested, so and I know they're all going to be good at speaking in public as well. So it's a combination of having people that I know will be good value, and topics that intrigue me and that I sort of picture how these topics will work out with these speakers, and I know, because I know a lot of them quite well, I know their different sort of viewpoints and their opinions. I'm thinking, oh, I'd like to put them in the room together to talk about preserving words or whatever. And so it's like creating a recipe, really, for something that I know the end product will be pleasing to an audience, and that it will appeal to local people. Well, we have people coming from far and wide, actually. It's not just a local thing. And that the authors taking part will enjoy speaking to those topics.
And I gather they come from quite a range of backgrounds. I mean, some people are published through the normal channels, and others are self-published and so on. You like to draw on that mix.
I do, and it's one of the ways, one of the distinguishing marks about the festival is that it isn't focused on how many books somebody has sold, whether they're a household name or not, how they're published, because actually the reader doesn't care how a book is published as long as it's a good book, it's presented nicely, and they enjoy reading it. You know, I couldn't tell you who, the book I'm reading at the moment, I couldn't tell you who the publisher is, because readers don't take note of that. You know, the route to publishing, provided the book is published to professional standard, it doesn't matter whether somebody has published it themselves or whether it's gone through to a big publishing house. So what I'm interested in is the the end product and the material and the final book and the thoughts and ideas in there, rather than how it's brought to its audience. So that also means that it's very egalitarian and very democratic, because although we do have people in there who are making a very good living out of either being published or self-publishing, and we've got some people there who are real top sellers, you know, really best sellers, who are making a very, very nice living from self-publishing their books, that doesn't actually matter. They will share a stage with somebody who might be just starting out, or somebody who's writing in a very small niche where you're never going to sell lots and lots of books. And we've also got people in there, it's not just authors, we've got, and some people wearing several hats as well, so we've got, for example, Dan Holloway, who is a performance poet, a novelist, works at a linguistics department of, one of the Oxford colleges, and he also goes into all sorts of competitions which have seen him crowned the most creative thinker in Europe and the most intelligent man in the world.
Oh, no pressure there then.
He's not a household name, but boy, is he amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So he's really, really good at with an audience. And he's on a panel with a career librarian who is also writing short stories and starting to write novels, and with the proprietor of two local independent bookshops. So that's a preserving words panel, so it's not a linguist, a bookseller and a librarian, but they are all lots of other things as well. And it's those sort of quirky mixtures that I really, really like. We've got some people who run small publishing houses as well as writing their own books. We've also got, I think on just about every panel, we've got somebody who is homegrown from the village. So, for example, Legacies of the First World War, one of the speakers there is a historian leading, who works from London, leading school parties and visitors to the battlefields in France and Belgium. The reason I've got him particularly is that he has written the biography of all of the people on our village war memorial. So we've got a really nice mixture there of national and international knowledge and interest. And importance with the very local interest as well.
I think you've really touched upon something with this, because it kind of shows up the vitality that there is in, what shall I call it, the community, if you like, for reading and for writing, which, I mean, brilliant and wonderful as Radio 4 is in the insights that it gives to this, it is actually quite singular. And when coming across what's up, the sort of things that are in this festival and listening to you now, it just makes me realise just how much bigger and broader the world, if you like, of writing and reading is.
Yes.
How much more varied.
Yes, it is. And I think it's also, this kind of festival is also very empowering, because you're not seeing people who are, you know, speaking at Cheltenham Literature Festival, all the big ones, and they're all fantastic. You know, I love all these book festivals. But it's, if you're a person, you know, ordinary man in the street, who is thinking of writing a book and is interested in writing, then I think that you will be far more empowered going to an event like this than to somewhere where you only see people who have got their books on the display tables in Waterstones all over the country, because you're seeing people who are more real and approachable. And some of our discussion panels last, one in particular I remember, because we have quite a lot of, we always have Q&A at the end, and the audience gets very engaged, and because they're quite small venues and they're very personal, very sort of intimate spaces, so maximum capacity of about 50 seats, people get very personally engaged, and they feel that they're really getting to know the speakers and the authors. Mm-hmm. And there was one particular panel last year that got very lively debate between the speakers and the floor, and somebody said to me afterwards, "Oh, you'd never get that at Cheltenham Lit Fest," which I thought was great, because no, actually, you know, if you're in a bigger auditorium, you'd be quite inhibited, I think, about engaging on an equal footing with the speakers. So I think this is very empowering and very democratic, and it's also celebrating the fact that although we're a relatively small village, out in the countryside, we've actually got so much going here. We've got all of human life is here, and in fact, we do. It's part of the whole sort of nature of community as well. Is that it's the local people here are very supportive of new things. They're very interested, very lively, very inquiring minds, and they'll try anything new. And by chance, half an hour before the festival starts, we're having a photo call, nothing to do with the festival, outside the village shop. A year ago, we changed our village shop into a community-owned shop, and everybody threw their hearts and souls into its relaunch and its revamp and became shareholders. It's just run the best community shop in the southwest.
So Hawkesbury Upton is the place to be, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes.
It is indeed. Now, I'd really like to move on. I'd like to move on to have a little, to give you yourself the floor a little bit about with your writing, because you sound like one of these amazing people who can do six things at once. You are a writer yourself, and you've published a number of books. Can you briefly tell us a little bit about your own writing? But what I really want to hear, because I believe you've got a sample of that, and you know, maybe you'd like to sort of just go into that, please.
My big sort of project at the moment is a series of seven novels in a cycle of cosy mystery stories that runs the course of the village year. It's set in a very similar environment to Hawkesbury Upton, although of course it's all made up, you know. it's Sophie Sayers' village mystery series, and Sophie Sayers is a young girl of about 20, she's 25, inherits her aunt's cottage in the village and is sort of thrown into village life following the breakup of an unhappy long-term romance, and she moves into the village and it's sort of a culture shock, but she throws herself into it, and the whole cycle of seven stories is about her sort of finding herself and becoming part of the village and sort of regaining her own zest for life and all that sort of thing. But along the way, there are a few murders.
Oh, as there, of course.
And the inspiration for the idea originally came because I was talking to a Dutch friend about village life here, and I was telling him about our village show, because we also have this enormous horticultural show, the second longest running one in the country, and I was telling him about it, and he said, "Oh gosh, it sounds like something off Midsummer Murders." And he said, "Do you have any murders in your village?" And I thought, "Oh, that's my title, Best Murder in Show." It's the first book. So the first book is in the summer, and there's a murder on a carnival float. Somebody's found dead. Sophie is the only one who thinks it's a murder, and so she investigates and does all she can to discover. She's got note that it's not a police procedural in any manner or means. She's just working on instinct and sort of native intelligence and so forth. There's lots of in jokes about village life, but it's also hugely affectionate and respectful of the nature of these close knit rural communities, and celebrating all that I have found here, living here for the last 20 odd years, because I'm originally from London. So there are lots of sort of little vignettes of village life and little relationships that build up, and the whole, you just get the whole atmosphere. I've really created this whole sort of world here that, I'm on the fourth book now, I'm just about to launch the fourth book on Saturday, and people are saying, "Oh, I feel I know the village now, I want to move into the fictional village of Wendlebury Barrow," and so I'm having great fun. Sort of inventing this sort of parallel universe, really, alongside Hawkesbury. But also, because Sophie is an aspiring writer and the job that she gets is working in the village bookshop, there are lots of, and there's a local writers group, and there's lots of sort of author jokes, bookshop jokes, literary jokes. It's not highbrow at all. It's very, very accessible.
Come on, then. Come on, share.
As well.
So share some with us.
Let me read this little bit.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, go on.
The latest book, then. And this is from 16, called The Mint Unwrapped, and this is a scene between the teenage boy who has become quite fond of Sophie. Never reads books, doesn't like books, but he comes in to just have a chat, and that's the kind of relationship, kind of friendships that build up in a community like this. So here we go. "Mum cried when I told her about Hermione Minty being dead," said Tommy next morning. "She said it was a shame she couldn't be able to write any more books." "That seems a reasonable conclusion, Tommy. So my friends at the writers group last night were saying she'll probably sell more now that she's died. That will make Hector happy. He really likes selling books, doesn't he? I nodded and got on with setting up the tea room for the day. Tommy was silent, which was generally more cause for alarm than Tommy being noisy. I could see he was thinking hard and building up to some wild statement. So, if books sell more after authors die, I suppose that makes it tempting for people who run bookshops to murder authors, because then they'll make more money. I nearly choked on my tea. I don't think so, Tommy. Booksellers are by and large law-abiding. But Hector was telling me the other week that some of the best authors are dead. He was talking about the authors of classics, people who were writing over 100 years ago. They're bound to be dead by now. All authors have to die eventually. Tommy looked around the shelves as if scanning for clues. He pulled out a book at random. What about this one? He held up a copy of Great Expectations. Well, yes, obviously Charles Dickens is dead. He crossed the room to the fantasy section and picked up Terry Pratchett. Sadly, yes, he's dead too, though he died far too young. Tommy held the books side by side to compare the author photos on the back. They looked pretty similar to me. He stuffed both books into a space on the dictionary shelf and wandered over to the travel section. He held up Maysayer's Cotswold's Guide. She was your auntie, wasn't she? Do you sell a lot of her books? I nodded. And she's dead. I could hardly disagree. He gave me an I told you so look. It's put me right off writing books when I grow up, he said. It sounds far too dangerous.
I love the idea of bookshop owners deliberately bumping off authors to increase sales. It's a novel technique. Who knows? It might work. No, let's move on from there. Let's not go there. Debbie, it's been lovely hearing about you and about the festival. Do you have, is there a website where people could go to A, learn about the festival, and B, maybe link on to find out some, link on to the authors' web pages so that they can trace through?
The festival website is www.hulitfest.com, and within that there is a, it's quite a sort of short and simple website, but there's a copy of the programme in there which says what everybody is doing, and there's a page of speakers which has got a list of speakers and a link to their various websites. And if they haven't got websites, then their Twitter page or whatever. So there's a link, I think, for just about every author on there, so they can find out more information about whichever they are interested in.
Brilliant, brilliant. Thank you very much indeed. And where can we get your books?
You can order them if you want to support your local bookshop. I'm a big one for supporting local bookshops. If you quote the ISBN number, they will order it in for you. Uh-huh. It's unlikely to be on the shelves like every day of the week, but they will order it in as quickly as online services would. And so they can get the paperbacks for you. If you just give the ISBN and the name of the book and my name, and you can find the ISBN on my own website, which is www.authordebbieyoung.com. And also you can buy them from Amazon. So if you just put the name of go into the book bit and search my name, you'll see all the books that I've written there, I've written a lot of other books as well, short stories and non-fiction and stuff as well. But the novels are my current passion, and that's I'm planning to be writing novels for many years.
Excellent. Well, may it serve your pension needs well. That's
excellent.
All right. Thank you, Debbie. Cheers. Thanks a lot now. Bye-bye.